Man, woman, or child can tell this story. Just as long as it's a soul for a start. All the better to make you glad. Cause your life has taken a different path. At the same time, wondering how I can get on a train to this town.
Welcome to Wake Up Call, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom radio show. We're located in Carrboro. I'm Emily O'Hare, here with Dick Paddock and Lori Hoyt. And my special house guest for a couple days is my grandson. Connor, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Connor Maddox. I live in Fewgrave Arena. Sorry if I sound a little nervous. Well, because I am.
So if he could...
And Connor, do you want to... what grade will you be going into?
I will be going into the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody you'd like to say hello to?
I'd like to say hello to my mom, dad, and my brother, Dylan.
Great. Thank you. Today, our special guest is Reverend Seymour, who'll be having... a discussion with Lori Hoyt.
Okay, so are we on? Is it sound okay? All right. Okay, I thought we were going to play some music. Okay, we're ready. So we have the Reverend Robert Seymour with us. I think many of our listeners will be familiar. If you've been around Chapel Hill any time at all, he is very much known in the community for years and years. And we're going
to be 55 years to be exact.
55 years, wow. So, and I think if there's a lot in this long. How old were you when you came here? Oh, well, we were figuring out your age that way.
I just had a birthday.
That's right,
Turner. I'm 90 years old.
90 years old, and so has lived here more than half your life.
Okay.
Has been here, and was it about 20 years you were the pastor of Binkley?
Would you believe 30?
30 years.
Yes.
And then retired and went on to that wasn't a real retirement, get people together to have a senior center?
That was my primary interest. I retired. Jerry Passmore, who was the chair of the Department on Aging,
yes,
contacted me and said, would you be on my advisory committee? And when I saw what passed for the Chapel Hill Senior Center, I thought we can do better than this.
Yeah.
And I began a long crusade with the county commissioners to build a senior center.
And that now, that is, you know, so well used. I don't know how many people are there every day. But I know it's
they estimate about 400 people into the senior center every weekday.
It's even more than I thought. I knew there was a lot. And it's named after you and your wife.
Yes, I was blown away when I learned that just before the center opened. It was supposed to be called the Southern Orange Senior Center. And they informed me that they had unanimously decided to recognize my long harassing them to build it.
So your wife Pearl was an important part of your life for many, many years.
We were a good team. She
yes.
was a good musician, and
that's right.
I'm the minister who ran away with the church organist.
And a happy marriage it was. And Pearl just passed away just a few years ago.
4 years ago,
yeah,
yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Time passes very fast.
Yes, it does. But I know as busy as you keep, that that's one way for any of us to handle grief is to be involved and connected with people.
Some continuity of your life is necessary.
Yes.
I have found many opportunities to be involved in the life of Chapel Hill.
Yes, you have. And it's been such a long and productive life. We said beforehand, you know, we really could have 2, 3, 4 hours, but we'll hit some highlights that are important to you right now. We've talked about the senior center, that you were one of the main ones that harassed and got money and pushed and pushed and pushed till, and before what you're talking about, what we had before that, it was rented space that, and then African Americans were usually going to another end of town, and so it was very segregated. And what's so wonderful with this new senior center, it is so integrated.
That pleases me more than anything else. Every ethnic group feels very much at home there. And you will be interested to know that recently we discovered a large community of Chinese retired people who've come to Chapel Hill.
Yes.
They're showing up nearly every day, and most of them don't speak English. So we've hired a Chinese-speaking social worker, and they're working with a second language, trying to be able to communicate better.
Well, that is wonderful. And so that is such an important thing to many of us, that we have an integrated senior center instead of the segregated one that we had before. Not that it was had to be segregated, but it just wasn't very convenient to make it integrated where it was located, et cetera. And now I think you provide buses to bring people in.
Yes, they come in from all over the county, but of course there's always a Chapel Hill free bus service for many people.
Yeah.
And our staff is also a very visibly integrated staff.
Yes, it is, which is also great. So that's been one big accomplishment that's come after your retirement, so-called retirement from being a pastor of one of the big influential churches in town. And when you were pastor of Binkley, you also took very crusading, controversial.
Well, I should let you know that when I came to Binkley, we had nothing except a piano and 40 hymn books, and we were meeting in Girard Hall on the university campus.
Oh, I didn't know
so
that.
So I was the first pastor, and we stayed on campus for almost 4 years and moved out to where we are now.
Uh-huh.
And the building was growing as the congregation grew.
As the congregation grew. It started out small.
We started out very small, primarily a group from the University Baptist Church, which was then the Chapel Hill Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt it was time to move in more progressive directions for Baptists. And, of course, I came here in 1959, and that meant plunging into the civil rights movement immediately. And the 60s was a highly controversial time. And
exciting time, though, too.
An exciting time. It was a time of major changes that were more difficult than any of us expected.
Yeah.
Because we have had this liberal image of Chapel Hill, and the fact is Chapel Hill was not liberal. And the fact is that we were as rigidly segregated as any community in the Deep South.
Yes, and I think there's still some problems with that. You know, I think the image is that it's much more liberal than it really is, and you have to really work hard for progress. It doesn't come
easily.
Well,
that image, I think, was projected by the fact that Chapel Hill, primarily, I guess, in the Department of Sociology, did the first definitive studies of the southern region, and people just assumed we were a liberal place.
Yeah. Well, and I think most university towns, there is an expectation that people can be a little more thoughtful and not go give in to the prevailing, maybe regressive or repressive measures, but it's not always so, and it takes a lot of work.
Well, Chapel Hill was featured all over the country for the crisis that we had, and many people are shocked to know that there were some very ugly incidents here in the civil rights movement, and there was a time when people were being arrested every day and taken to the jails in Hillsborough. And many people here don't know much about that, and This leads me to make my pitch for a resurrection of our Chapel Hill Museum, which was closed several years ago. And many of us felt that that was a very bad decision.
Yes.
But now that we may have an opportunity to right that decision by occupying the Old Town Hall, because the Old Town Hall will be empty very soon. We have a new community house, meaning a new homeless shelter that hopefully will be finished in September. And the town manager and the mayor and members of the town board are looking with significant favor upon the Old Town Hall becoming both the new visitor center and Chapel Hill Museum.
Oh, that would be wonderful. So you already have another project. I'm sure you keep a few of them like a juggler up in the air at the same time. So this is a
I sort of stumbled into this one, and it's going to be a very difficult thing to get done. But we have encouraging grassroots support.
I know that you know a lot of people who have some power with the levers of yeah. how things move and how they can move ahead. I know it won't be easy, but I think if people understand how important it would be and what an asset it would be to the town.
And, of course, in Chapel Hill, if we have a museum, the university needs to be very much a part of the effort, because there could be no Chapel Hill without the university.
That's true.
In the beginning, we were a company town. The university owned all the utilities.
When I moved here in the 70s, they owned the telephone company.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. All the utilities. And so we grew up together. And it took us a while to separate town and gown. It didn't happen overnight.
So I want to get back to the civil rights movement, though. I know even there was that speaker ban law. That was another big, I'm sure, where we got national publicity, where I still remember that scene where there was a speaker that they said was a communist and couldn't be on campus, and so all the students were...
He was on the wall.
On the wall, and he was on the other side of the wall on the public sidewalk, not on the university property. And that was just so heartening that they weren't going to let some law that a legislature, just like our current one at this time, was not the best legislature.
That's true, and many people in the university kept very quiet
for fear
that anyone who protested would be punished.
Yes. So even liberal professors worry about their job tenure, and so.
There was an organization called Southern Conference Education Fund, and we were asked to host a weekend conference here in Chapel Hill. My friend Vance Barron, who was the pastor of the University Presbyterian Church, agreed for it to be held there. There were people on Franklin Street giving out pink pamphlets accusing Vance and me of being communists.
Yeah, that's their tactic, you know. They always find some demonology label to put on you to try to say, don't listen to this person. Yeah, so that was one time you were being called a communist. I'm sure you were called other things at other times, too. I remember another big controversy, and I'm not sure it's when you were still pastor or not, over the gay issue.
Well, the gay issue has not been an issue at Binkley Church for a long time.
No, not for a long time, but it was there way, way back.
We have been a welcoming and affirming congregation.
Absolutely.
Almost from the start.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe it was about having a gay minister. Was that what the controversy was? This was several years ago, but I just remember how brave you all were.
Well, I think the fact is that her sexual orientation was not an issue, but many people realized that she was a person of a different orientation, and there were those who were upset about it.
But you all stood firm, and now that's all
we
worked out?
We stood firm, and we have already had same-sex marriages at Binkley Church.
Well, that so you're not your typical Baptist church. I think you all belong to the American Baptist Church.
We were excommunicated from the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yes.
And we wear that as a badge of courage.
Of honor.
And now we are participating in the American Baptist Convention, which during the Civil War was known as the Northern Baptist Convention.
Okay. Because I know you have some sister Baptist churches, Watt Street Baptist Church in Durham, and Pullen.
That's right. Watt Street in Pullen and Binkley. We're the Trinity in the triangle.
The progressive Trinity that gives us all hope and keeps us going. So the civil rights movement, it was uglier than a lot of people who have come here in recent years would realize, and I know you played a part in that struggle.
The issue came to a head when we tried to pass a local public accommodations law.
Mm-hmm.
And we discovered that the restaurants, most of them were rigidly segregated, mm-hmm. and would not serve black people.
Mm-hmm.
And the protests began with marches, which were, for the most part, peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And after no change occurred, it moved to sit-ins. The mm-hmm. first sit-in was in the Chamber of Commerce office. And that's when the arresting started. People were arrested and taken to jail. And there were literally over 1,000 people who went to Hillsborough jail because of students were lying down in the street, blocking traffic in Chapel Hill. And it was not until the federal government passed a national public accommodations law that the restaurants finally opened. One of the stories that has been repeated frequently because of the participant is Dean Smith helping to break down the barrier at what was then the Pines. This was before there were any black students on the basketball team.
Uh-huh.
And Dean Smith had been asked by our church to find the best black basketball player he could find and let that be his church work. And he teamed up with me and an African-American student, and we went to the Pines to see if they would comply with the national law. And when they looked out and saw Dean Smith there, the door opened.
Wow.
He and I have been given credit for integrating all of Chapel Hill, but that was greatly exaggerated.
Yeah. Well, I know another restaurant I remember here in Brady's, I think, was a... That was one of the painful.
It was very hard to pick at Brady's because they had such good Southern food.
Oh, gee. So we're looking back over a very long life, and Reverend Seymour just turned 90 just a few months ago.
A few weeks ago.
That's right, just a few weeks ago. And already, just was it last week, there was I saw you at another organization that I think you helped start. It was People of Faith Against the Death Penalty. And Stephen Deere, who's been there for 18 years, it was a farewell. And you were there and gave a very good talk.
There was a special task force in the North Carolina Council of Churches trying to get support for the abolition of the death penalty. And that eventually became a spinoff and chose the name People of Faith Against the Death Penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have part in that from the beginning. And I think Steve Deere has left an incredible legacy. We have not had an execution in the state in 9 years. So we virtually have a de facto abolition.
Yeah.
And I think that the whole nation is having second thoughts about the death penalty. The last state to get rid of the death penalty was the state of Nebraska. And there are others who are pushing toward that.
Because we don't think of Nebraska as a particularly progressive state, and yet they have gotten, it's been state after state. It takes so much work and effort, but the tide of history, I hope, is...
We're on the right side of it.
We're on the right side of it, yeah.
Yes.
So that was, and I had not known till that night that you had helped start that. So, and of course, it didn't surprise me. Of course, it did not surprise me. So...
I think the thing that I am most proud of course, is what Binkley Church has become.
Yes.
Because it's a congregation that is known, and I think we are given some credit for breaking some of the prejudice that people tend to have about Baptists in general.
Mm-hmm.
They joke about Baptists being so conservative. But in fact, there's a large number of moderate Baptist churches all over the South,
mm-hmm.
and they are known not as Southern Baptists, but as Cooperative Baptists.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that. Yes. I thought you had to, like, leave the Southern Baptists and go with the American Baptists, but there's a third way.
That's right.
Cooperative.
Cooperative Baptists.
Oh, for goodness sake. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
the one thread of support that has begun in my life and continues to this day is the founding of the Interfaith Council.
Yes.
As is often the case, the real founders of the Interfaith Council were a group of women who saw the local needs of poverty in Chapel Hill, Carborough, and who found themselves moving furniture for people who were sleeping on the floor, and they came to the clergy meeting and said, "We can't do this. We need some strong arms, and we are here to ask you to start a new social service organization, and we'll call it the Interchurch Council." But later we changed it to a faith council because some of the most active people in the organization in the early days and today are members of the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
This was founded in 1962, and who would have ever dreamed that it would emerge as the main social service agency in Chapel Hill, because it was Band-Aid kind of approach to problems locally. We were getting food from the agriculture department, and on cold winter mornings we're distributing butter and flour and sugar that were given to us out of the back door of a school in Carborough. And we'd have long lines of people on those Saturdays coming to pick up free food. Then came the food stamps that put us out of business there.
Mm-hmm.
And in a similar way, the Interfaith Council has spun off other organizations. We had a clothing cooperative for people who needed clothing, and we gave that up when the PTA started their collecting of clothing for people mm-hmm. at a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm.
The next big project of the Interfaith Council after the new shelter opens. And by the way, if you haven't seen it, you should go by and see it. It's almost finished.
And that's something we...
It's on, Martin Luther King Boulevard, right next door to the UCC Church, next door. And that church deserves a lot of appreciation. Not one word of criticism or controversy has come from that church about having the homeless shelter next door.
You are so right. I felt the same way. I say to people, you know, a lot of times you can see some church people saying, "Oh, people in the choir will be coming out at 10 o'clock at night, and they'll be afraid." That church has gone to meeting after meeting and strongly supported that shelter.
Yes.
It's been beautiful.
Well, the community kitchen will still be somewhere downtown. And since I'm here in Carborough at this moment, I would like to let you know that the hope is that the community kitchen can eventually be where the food pantry is located here in Carborough.
Yes.
This will be another major project because it's going to mean renovating that whole building.
Yes.
The Board of Aldermen of Carborough have already looked at this, and I think we have a majority feeling that it's something feasible and that Carborough is likely to welcome.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's going to be a little bit of work to get everybody on board about it, but
right.
but we have some pretty progressive people in the Board of Aldermen that I think will
sure
go to
do.
Bat for it. I sure hope so.
Yes.
Yeah, so then that's when that happens, and then your vision will be where the community kitchen is now in the old town hall on downtown Chapel Hill, that will then become the Chapel Hill Museum.
And the
visitors.
Visitor Center.
Mm-hmm.
Many people don't even know we have a visitor center because it's so far down Franklin Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost in Carver.
It is almost in Carver. You're right. And, it's right.
The visitor center needs to be easy to locate it and centrally located.
And bring people right to downtown in the heart of Chapel
right.
Hill.
The walk-in traffic. Yes, mm-hmm, I mm-hmm. think that's so. We couldn't ask for a better location.
No, yeah. so that there's another project that you're still working on.
With a lot of help.
With a lot of help. With a lot of help. Do we have a station break coming up or?
5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
5 minutes.
Okay. So one of the things that I was interested in was. You've worked so hard for social justice for your whole life. Where did that come from? Was that instilled from your parents? How old were you when you started really thinking about these things?
I think I would have to say that it came from my church.
Okay.
My family was very close to the church, and as I became a teenager, I began to realize that what I saw around me was not what. I heard at church. I was taught by Sunday school teachers that God thought the races should be kept separate, that they were like the birds. They don't join each other in families. They're all separate.
Oh, that's what was said in
that,
church?
That made good sense at that time. But
uh-huh.
I later thought, well, the scripture doesn't quite square with that. But I guess I would have to also say that the big change in my life came when the Navy sent me to Yale Divinity School.
Okay. The Navy, so you were in the Navy?
I was in the Navy, yes, that's right, that's right.
And so this was the Second World War?
This was the Second World War. I finished my first year of college and then was successful in getting into the V-12 program, which was for professional people in the Navy, engineers, doctors, lawyers, dentists, and chaplains. And I was on track to be a Navy chaplain when the war
ended.
Yeah.
So the Navy sent you to Yale Divinity School? Or
yes.
did they, was that the GI Bill or?
No.
Okay,
no. This was, the war was still going on.
So they wanted you to be a really good chaplain?
And, well, that was where the Navy was training its chaplains.
Wow, that's interesting, yeah. Yeah.
It was a great place.
So that's when you really,
Well, I was in an integrated environment. And you know that for a while the services were all segregated.
I know.
But Harry Truman is the man who ruled that they should not be segregated.
And that was at the end, though, of the Second
right.
World War,
right.
which made it unfortunate in terms of the GI Bill because a lot of African Americans were put in very menial jobs in the service.
Yes.
So when they got out, they tried to look at them what about going to college or not, and they got kind of screwed there.
Let me tell you a success story. In my hometown, which was Greenwood, South Carolina,
okay,
we have a big monument in the center of the square for remembering the people who died in World War II. White names on one side and black names on the other. I was at Yale Divinity School when the American Legion did that, and I wrote an angry letter to the Index Journal saying, how could you not know what the war was about, and put that there. Well, Greenwood, South Carolina now has a mayor. At first, they had an African-American mayor for 10 years.
Okay.
Now they have a very liberal white mayor, and he's trying his best to get that monument put in the Greenwood Museum. So it's amazing what time will do.
It is. So, okay, we're going to take a station break now. We can catch our breath
And this is Wolf's Wake Up Call on 103.5 FM. Our guest today is Reverend Seymour. We're getting some really good history lessons. You can stream us live on WCOMFM.org. We are underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore, which is located on Lloyd Street in Carborough, almost across the street from the Arts Center, which we're right next to. I have one announcement that I'd like to make, and that has to do with if anyone would like to donate school supplies, cash is very welcome, to the Rogers Eubank Neighborhood Center. I have the number there. It's 919-918-2822, and they would welcome supplies. As a matter of fact, I think it's on Saturday we're going to be doing book bags for the kids.
550 book bags are going to be given out to kids in those neighborhoods. And this is, again, another very integrated. There's blacks, there's whites, there's Karen people from, what is that, Indonesia or Burma. There's a variety of different ethnic groups. They are getting along very well, and that community center is a beacon of hope. And that's another thing that got worked on by that community for years. So, yes, they're going to have a book back-to-school bash on Saturday. And so not only give them the book bags, but for the elementary school, they fill it with what the teachers want, nice. Elementary, middle school, high school. So that is a huge, huge expense. So please, if you can, donate supplies, and money's really always helpful. So that would be great. And the other thing we need to talk about is maybe, Dick, you want to talk about that? Dick Paddock is my co-host, and Emily O'Hare, about Thursday, tomorrow.
That's tomorrow, Thursday. It's a correction of history that's being presented as a news conference by the North Carolina NAACP and several other groups like WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Excuse me. It's going to be at the old Hillsboro courthouse at 11 o'clock, and it will be open to the public, as many people as we can get to come.
Reverend Barber will be speaking.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yes. It wasn't.
Yes, Reverend Barber will be
there. This is to sort of preempt. On Saturday, there's going to be a group that wants to support the Confederate flag and see that as they feel threatened because South Carolina took it off their Capitol building, I guess it was. So anyhow, they've been organizing, and they had 1,000 or 1,500 people in Alamance County a few days ago. They were in three or four other counties. It looks like there's some outside organizers promoting this. And rather than trying to have a counter demonstration on Saturday, we're trying to take the high road and get our values and the true history out and have this press conference on Thursday. So if you're concerned about, you know, the reemergence of Klan kind of activities, please come tomorrow, Thursday. Come to Hillsboro. The old courthouse is right around the corner from the new courthouse, and there's some nice shady trees there. And please come, and you'll get a wonderful history lesson, and you will be supporting what we hope is the progressive wing of people in North Carolina. So do try to show up and pay attention. If you can't come, pay attention to what's happening.
Yeah. Could I just add that also I think Reverend Barber will be speaking about promoting accurate history of racism in our public institutions. I think that's a big part of why we're doing this.
Absolutely, because there's a lot of whitewash has been, a lot of people are not really aware of a lot of the history. And this flag is really, if you're going to look historically, it's a flag of treason and a flag of wanting to overthrow the elected government. So, so that's getting a way of looking at our history rather than promoting the Confederate flag. Okay. So I want to get back to our guest, and Emily and Dick, feel free to chime in at any point. And Reverend Robert Seymour, who has been in this community for 55 years and has been a very positive force for many of the things that we now take for granted. We've been talking about the Interfaith Council. We've been talking about, the whole civil rights movement, that he came right at the forefront, became a new pastor with a very small congregation meeting in Girard Hall on campus, not even having a church. For 4 years, just a small group of people who really wanted this to be a better world and a better place. And we've been talking also about the Seymour Center, named after Reverend Seymour and his wife, Pearl, which is now a thriving, integrated senior center that means so much to so many older people, all kinds of lessons and fun things and there's a very inexpensive lunch every day during the week that people can go and help extend their food budget and get.
And let's not forget that when the Seymour Center was built as the Southern Orange Center, we also built the Central Orange Center in Hillsborough.
Yes, that's right. Right around the same time.
That's right.
So Hillsborough, yes, and that's also a thriving,
it is.
Thriving center, and people come to this one, and I'm sure to Hillsborough from all over. We have the city buses, but there's also special buses for some outlying places. Bring people in, and it's just an invaluable resource in the community.
There's a feeling that it is reaching its capacity of serving the number of people who are coming.
Yeah, I know. When you said 400, I thought, oh, my gosh.
And we have a long-range planning committee looking toward the future about how to enlarge this center.
Okay. Yeah, when you said, I knew it was very bustling, a lot going on, all kinds of, but when you said 400 a day, I thought, oh, my gosh. Yeah, that does sound like it's reaching capacity.
Well, you may remember that we had an interim center down Elliott Road for 15 years.
Yes, that was in rented space.
It was a rented space. The commissioners wanted to see and have demonstrated that this was a legitimate need.
Oh, yeah.
And we were so eager to see this happen that we said, we will pay half the rent if you'll pay half the rent. And we stayed there 15 years, and we had to raise all that money to keep paying them around.
Well, it's a beautiful building and a thriving center. And, it's almost its own success is near. So you always have to look ahead and think, what the needs of the future will be. And you're the kind of person who is a visionary.
Well, most people may be surprised to know that we have over 10,000 seniors in Chapel Hill, almost the identical number as our students in the public schools.
Wow. There's a lot of us old folks around.
That's right, and there are going to be more.
So, it's become a very desirable place to retire to, with the climate, with the free buses, with the senior center. It's a wonderful place.
Well, thank you.
So we started talking about where you got your first ideas about social justice. So, yeah. You got some in your church growing up, even though racially it was not ahead of its time at all. But then when you got into Yale Divinity School, that's where you became in contact with all kinds of
yes.
people. Yeah.
there were African American students there, and it was a world that turned everything upside down. The maids were white, and I was accustomed to growing up where all the maids and janitors were black, and that was not the case in New Haven.
So, for a Southern boy, it was like an eye opener.
Topsy-turvy.
And out of that, though, you started getting some new ideas about what's fair, what's just.
Yeah. And I would like to say that my vision of what this country is and can be came not by living in this country altogether. I spent 2 years in Scotland as a student at the University of Edinburgh.
Okay. So tell me about that. What did that open your eyes to?
Well, I learned very quickly that if anyone thought I was okay, they would ask, what part of Canada do you come from? Because they didn't have the best image of our tourists from the USA.
So you were not acting like a typical tourist, so they thought you were from Canada. So that made you realize that we're not, there's reasons why we're not so beloved around the world.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a humbling thing to kind of start viewing your own country through the lens of other people.
And one of the wonderful things that's happening here at the university is that more and more students are spending a semester abroad.
Yes.
And I think something else that has enriched this country has been the Peace Corps. Some of our finest citizens are those who spend a year in a third world country and come back and see the shame of inequity. But we don't have to go abroad to see that. The inequity of having 1% own 40% of the country's wealth is shameful, too.
Yeah. Well, being in another country, I had the great fortune to live for 1 year in Greece in the 50s and 2 years in Trinidad in the West Indies around 59 and 60. And I just learned more from that than I think from my college education. I mean, it was an eye-opener. And the eye-opener to me was, even though people were poor, what joy they just had, this life vitality and joy. And it's like some spark that it's hard to find in this country, this sense of community.
Yes. We tend to identify happiness with money, consuming things.
Yes, and that was and growing up relatively poor, thinking, oh, when we get a little ahead, we could get this or get that, and I got to realize, that is not where it's at all. Yeah, and they had strong, their neighborhood, strong connections with their family and neighbors.
And when you get to be 90 years old, you also have a different way of looking at the world. You see things that you may not have looked closely at while you were younger.
Yeah. Well, I'm 81, and I agree with you that your hope as you get older, it's not just seeing that your body's not working quite as well, but that you gain a little bit of wisdom and a little bit of what's really important, and what am I going to fuss about, or what do I really need to, what makes in this remaining years, what makes me happy and fulfilled. Yeah.
A few moments ago, you spoke about church in Girard Hall. But we learned in those 4 years that was not our church. The church is where the people are.
Yes.
You learned
the building was not what was important.
That's right. That the church is where one can be, where everyone can be a minister, not just the ordained clergy.
So that, and that's important for a lot of churches to realize that the building is not what's important. It's these people in the building, and that we love each other and bring that love out into the world. Yeah. So you are still involved with church.
I stayed away for 3 years after I retired. I had an interim ministry in Beckley, West Virginia. And I drove to Beckley, West Virginia every Saturday afternoon and came back after prayer meeting on Wednesday night. My wife could not go with me because she was still teaching kids piano.
Oh.
And I had made the wonderful discovery as we visited all the other churches in Chapel Hill that I had friends in all the churches, and that was good news. Now, as a retired minister of Binkley Church, I sit on the back row. I'll never go to a business meeting. And the only job I have accepted has been in the grounds committee. But now that I can no longer get down to take care of the weeds, I'm no longer there. I've retired from that, too.
So getting older, a lot of it is a process of letting go. Yeah. Of some things, you know, these things.
It's also learning how to say no.
Yeah, let it go, and it becomes each time you practice, it gets a little easier.
But
doesn't
then
it?
Somebody asked me to have an interview at the Carbara, and I said yes.
And I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Well, what's nice about coming to this is not like an ongoing commitment. You know, you don't have to come every Wednesday. Yeah, so we're so delighted that you did
Thank
say
you.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Perfect.
So how are we doing? We still got some time. So what is it we haven't covered in this?
Ed has something he'd like to.
Yeah.
Ed?
Ed, yeah.
What's that?
Oh, Ed, I forgot about you being here, Ed. Pull up a stool. Join the conversation.
Bob and I have something in common that we haven't mentioned yet.
This is
Ed, journalism.
This is Ed King. This is Ed King, who is part of our little team here, and he's the one that lines up guests and saves me a lot of extra work, and I really appreciate it. So,
for 30 years, was it that you wrote the column for the Village Voice?
Oh, I forgot all about that. Yeah.
At the Chapel Hill News, and then
I'm not exactly sure how many years, but it was a long time.
So most people who've been here in the community know the Village Voice column that he wrote,
and they will think that the appropriate words on my tombstone should be an advocate for the preservation of sweet tea.
That's his most famous column, when he was saying the most important thing about the South is sweet tea.
And some person read that column and not knowing that it was tongue-in-cheek, and they wrote a letter saying, who was that nut who wrote that letter? And the editor of the newspaper said they had never received so many letters and defending me.
So all of these have been compiled. These all columns have been compiled into one book called The Village Voice, which Bob has we published, I think, in 2003 or something like that.
I think so.
And anyway, his reputation as a journalist was not only with this column, but he became the chairman of the North Carolina Editorial Forum Board for a period of time, which I was on the board of and met him there. This North Carolina Editorial Forum Board had as its humble mission to try to find people in North Carolina who would write progressive op-eds.
Okay.
On all the different issues. And he knew more people who would write than anybody we've ever had on the board. Everybody knew Bob, and Bob knew everybody, and he knew who would do the best job on each issue.
And unfortunately, that organization has not survived, and it was serving a very important need, because there are many controversial issues that need to be addressed by competent people who know what they're talking about.
That's right. It's still a need for it.
So maybe you should get that board going again.
Right. Well, the office of that is in the National Press Club up in Washington, D.C. They're the ones that actually do the mechanical distribution of all the articles and stuff. And so it's got an important place. One question that I wanted to take from his one of his columns that I think people would be interested in is why Bob thinks that the term healthcare industry is a offensive term.
It does offend me because healthcare was originally a primary service of the church, and many of our best hospitals were founded by the church, and it was not a business. It was a ministry. But today we know that healthcare has become a business, and even though we now have the beginning of universal healthcare, we are under assault from those who want to keep it as a business, and that's going to be a battle that is yet to come.
Yes, as the healthcare, I just heard the tail end of a discussion on NPR about the prices, you know, that the hospitals have consolidated, and a lot of them won't budge on prices.
And a lecturer came to the university, to Chapel Hill's hospital, and all the employees were invited to hear this lecturer at various times. And one of his main points was that we should stop calling people patients. They should be called customers. And that was so offensive to me.
God, yes. Yeah. So those money forces, you know, they're very powerful in this country.
And this issue, although he wrote about it a long time ago, is still very hot. You know, the commercialization of everything. Now, another issue that you took a stand on in your column was the gun issue.
The gun issue.
Oh. And you played a game. You created a game called Find the Gun.
Yes.
Tell us about that, Bob.
And that was every time you turn on the TV, surf the channels and see how long it will take you to find a gun. And usually you could find a gun on television in less than 5 minutes.
Oh. And, you know, all of these, whenever those columns were written, all of these are hot issues still today.
Yeah.
You know, health care, the gun lobby. You know, there was just last night on television the whole thing about it was a repeat from January on the NRA and the ghastly power that they wield in terms of, you know, there's two issues that a lot of politicians don't want to touch, and that's guns and that's Israel. They just back off.
There's not hardly an issue that he hasn't covered in this column, so I suggest people buy this book.
It's
still available.
It's not available anymore.
Well, I'm glad I got one of the last copies. One other thing that I think would kind of have our listening audience see what a well-rounded, versatile man this is that he learned in middle age how to ski.
Oh, I learned that when my teenagers were skiing, and my wife and I said, why aren't we learning as well? And I must say, that's the one thing I've missed most as an older man. I stopped downhill skiing when I was 82.
That is brave. That is brave. You weren't worried about breaking a leg or?
No, but I came to that point realizing that I couldn't afford to do that any longer.
Okay. So you got, but because you were brave, you got, skiing probably for about 20 years?
Oh, to see the world from height and all of its winter grandeur was just an act of worship, really.
Well, Reverend Seymour, I guess, you know, as we're talking, I really see you as a Renaissance man. You know, really, that your interests, but the connecting link is, except for the skiing, always comes back to the community, you know?
And I was wise enough to marry someone who could
share,
could fill my illiteracy of music.
And so Pearl was a wonderful musician. Yeah. So you made a great team.
Yes.
And you're still going strong, still having a vision. But you've anything you look at in the community, you've been involved in.
Well, you know, that comes from being here a long time and just happening to
Well,
be
there's
in
people
the right
can live here
right
for a
time.
Long time and kind of keeping their own little, you know, way of looking at things and not move out. And, I mean, every progressive thing in this community you've touched on and had some involvement with, if not started it.
I think in the book, in one of his columns, Rabbi John Friedman complimented you on not trying to proselytize Jews.
And that's a very interesting thing to think about. I grew up at a time when one of the main issues of the church was proselyting Jews. And that's not being done anymore. Not much. Not much. Most mainline denominations speak of themselves as Judeo-Christian believers. We're together as children of Abraham, mm-hmm. and we shouldn't be trying to proselyte anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's sort of insulting to that.
Of course it is.
That religion and those
and
people.
As a Baptist, used to feel that everybody had to be a bona fide Christian only by being under the water. Now, many Baptist churches are willing to accept people who have been sprinkled instead of that.
But you know, one of the things I know I was brought up a Catholic, and one of the things that I still hold dear was this idea that we are all children of God. And, you know, and I don't remember, because I grew up in the North, ever it being a race thing, but that we are all children of God, and God loves every one of us and died for every one of us.
Today it's very important to realize that Muslims, Christians, and Jews are all children of Abraham,
yeah.
which means we're first cousins with Muslims as
That's
well
right,
as Jews.
As well as Jews. That's yeah. right. And one of our Wolf sisters, Miriam Thompson, has in fact started a group, AIM. What is that? I'm trying to think what it stands for. But it is where she's trying to get together the three religions, Abrahamic religions, and get to realize that we all are cousins and working yes. together. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And interfaith is the word today instead of yeah. interdenominational.
Yeah. So things, I mean, when we look at this poor groaning world that and all the horrific and tragic things that are still going on, but there has been, we got to hold on to hope, and that there is still these, we can look at this progress that's been made, we can look at the progress in terms of race, even though obviously we still have a long way to go, but there has been progress when we look at accepting people with sexual orientation. You know, there has been progress, and what's really hopeful is that the young people are leading the way on that,
right.
you know, in terms of race and in terms of, yes, you young ones, Connor, who's here giving a cheer. You want to, so because, you know, some of the older ones are going to, they hold dearly and fastly to their prejudices. Some people don't grow in wisdom as they get older. They kind of get tighter and hold on tighter to some ideas. But the young people are much more open to acceptance of many kinds of people.
I live at Carroll Woods. I've been there for 15 years. And one of our most active groups is the Elders for Peace. They meet every week at 1 o'clock, and they tackle these issues. And,
yeah.
People generally think the older people are more conservative, but that's a false prejudice. It's not true.
No, it's not true. There's a few, but a lot of...
There are many of them who may not be, but
may not
let's
be.
Not put everybody in that group.
Absolutely. Elders for Peace and Wilf, you know, a lot of us are not spring chickens, and... And we've been going strong in this community for 80 years. And in fact, this year we're celebrating our 80th birthday in this community and our 100th birthday internationally.
Okay.
So that's we're going to do a station break, a station identification. So we're going to be wrapping up here. And is there any last thing that we did not talk about that you, and maybe you want to go back and mention again something that you're very hopeful about, and that is about the town hall?
I am a very optimistic person, mm-hmm. a very hopeful person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on all these issues, we are gaining ground despite the tragedies that we see.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that troubles me is our failure as a nation to do something about gun violence. I think that's something that should have more attention putting the pressure on Congress in whatever way we can.
Yeah.
Many of them are receiving too much money from gun manufacturers.
Yeah.
And they're being paid to vote the way they vote. And that's something we need to stop.
So that's one thing, if we can do some campaign finance reform and kind of clean up our system.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the other big issue which you alluded to a little bit earlier, and that was that the 1% and the rest of us, that the disparity between rich and poor has grown deeper and wider and more frightening. And now,
Reverend Seymour, thank you so much. You're such an inspiration.
Thank you
for being here.
You've been listening to Wilf's Wake Up Call. Please join us next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Thank you.